whose long-enjoyed life of privilege is slipping away, but whose members refuse to let go without a fight. Dividing the Estate will play a strictly limited engagement March 28th through April 27th at Palm Beach Drama Works on Clematis Street, West Palm Beach. Information and tickets at 561-514-4042 or online at palmbeachdramaworks.org.
And 7 minutes past 1 o'clock, it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman on this Monday edition. And this hour, we're at your service. The topic is care for elderly parents. We visit with journalist Virginia Morris, or is it Gigi Morris?
I go by either one.
Okay. Virginia Morris. Gigi Morris, she's the author of How to Care for Aging Parents, a one-stop resource for all your medical, financial, housing, and emotional needs. And she joins us from Sag Harbor, New York. Welcome to you, Gigi.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being with us. I thought before we begin, Virginia, we should bring in our listeners. If you have questions regarding an aging parent, if you're
an ancient parent,
well, aging parent, if you're a caretaker already or about to be, you can speak with Virginia Morris at 800-743-9576. That's 1-800-743-9576, or you can email us radio@wlrn.org. So what are the statistics, Virginia? What's the magnitude of this situation now?
Well, you know, the statistics go all over the board, but about over 40,000 people are caring for an elderly person. It's really hard for people to judge. It's sort of interesting because so many people don't see themselves as caregivers, even though that's exactly what they are. You know, they're just doing things for mom or dad that any kid should do, and they don't sort of identify themselves as caregivers. So when they do surveys, people say they aren't caregivers until you ask a lot of questions. And, well, yeah, I drive her to the doctor, and, yeah, I help with her finances, and, yeah, I manage her medications. And
right.
And, of course, yes, you are a caregiver.
You know, it occurred to me that here we have a generation of baby boomers, many with their children well on their own, many on the cusp of retirement themselves, and now facing a situation of caring for their parents when they are almost in that position themselves to be cared for.
Yeah, and it's hard because people don't really plan for this. I mean, you kind of know you may have to do something, but you don't plan for what it really might be. And so you're 65 and mom and dad are 85, or you're 75. I've met a number of people who are dealing with parents who are 100. I've met people who actually move into sort of life care facilities or you know, retirement areas together, the children and the parents. So I think it also can make it a little scarier while you're doing it because you're sort of thinking, well, so am I next?
Mm-hmm.
And what's this going to look like for me? And how do I protect my kids? And, you know, I don't really want it to be quite like this.
What if you aren't a son or a daughter, but a close friend of someone who doesn't have any children? And yet, obviously, they have needs and need to be taken care of.
Well, you raise a great point. And, you know, I typically deal with the kids who are caring for a parent. But when somebody doesn't have kids or maybe lives really far from their children, it's really helpful if they can talk to their closest friends and really have very, you know, serious meeting, bring them all over, have lunch, whatever. But outline your wishes and what you hope would happen and let them know what you want in case, you know, you went to the hospital or you had a fall or there were medical questions that needed to be dealt with, financial questions. You know, let them know where you keep important documents. Find some trusted friends and make a little circle of people who will step in when there's a problem. And if you have kids that are far away, again, you know, still those people should know who to call and who has what authorities. But you may want to make one of your friends your, you know, healthcare proxy or your give them power of attorney for your financial matters, so that somebody can step in and make decisions, because you don't want to end up in the hands of a public case manager.
What if you're not a son or a daughter, you're a friend, but you're dealing with dementia and maybe incontinence and things?
You have a friend who's dealing with all those things already.
Where do you turn?
Well, there are public resources. There are care managers, case managers. I mean, my first call would be to the Area Agency on Aging, which you can find if you go online to eldercare.gov. You can find the agency that oversees the area that this person lives in and see what services are available. And they usually have a caseworker or someone you can talk to about the issues and how this person's getting on and what needs they have and what services they need, and kind of create a plan with them. But I would say whatever's going on, to just keep involved if you can. I mean, it's a lot to ask of a non-relative, but stay involved, visit, check up on things, because unfortunately what can happen when somebody has dementia and nobody really looking out for them is, you know, they get put in the care of a case manager, of a guardian, a professional guardian, and while most of them are, decent, honest people, it's a hard position to put somebody in. You know, they have full access to somebody's finances and can make decisions about them, and they maybe didn't know this person before they had dementia, and we need to really be careful and look out for these people, because they are so vulnerable, this population. And so, you know, I think you want to check in on things and kind of ask a lot of questions and be involved as much as you can.
Well, getting back to parents, how early should we address, because they're very delicate issues with our parents, and when aware that we do need to do it, how do we go about having that first conversation?
Well, first of all, I would say, you know, don't wait. I mean, people always ask me, what are the signs that I need to step in and get involved? I would say start having the conversations right away. Nobody has ever said to me, gee, we talked about this too early in the process. but I can tell you that it can become too late very suddenly. So, you know, talk with whether it's your parent or your elderly friend or another relative right away about issues like finances, how they hope to pay for long-term care, nursing home care, any kind of care they would need, and housing. You know, mom, if you couldn't live in this house, where would you want to be, and what's important to you, and where would you want to move to? And, you know, look into the local options. Make sure somebody has a signed power of attorney, which is giving somebody the legal right to make financial decisions on your behalf and, you know, pay your bills and take care of your business. A health care proxy, which is the same thing for medical decisions. Make sure you have a living will. And then talk at some length about even those difficult subjects like end-of-life care and, you know, how aggressive do you want medical care to be, and how should we make decisions when things get tougher? You know, they're really hard conversations to have, but once you open that door, it's a relief for everybody, and you'll learn things that you didn't know, and I think it gives everyone some peace of mind. But these conversations, you know, they don't happen in one sitting, so start early. It takes time to kind of pry that door open, and then you need to have kind of ongoing conversations as this person's health and life changes.
How far does power of attorney go? You talked about the economic aspect, but if you have power of attorney, how far can you go? Can you tell someone that they have to move to another state or something?
Well, if you have what you want is something called durable power of attorney, which means that when somebody is considered incompetent or is ill, you still have the power. And you can decide when you write a power of attorney exactly how much power you want to give somebody, whether you want them to be able to even, you know, write gifts to your checks to your children or what their job is. Mostly you're hoping they're just going to pay your bills and keep your finances intact. But yes, if you have certain power of attorney, you can make decisions about moving a parent into a facility of some sort. And if you have the health care power of attorney, you're making decisions about all of their medical care as long as they can't speak for themselves or make decisions for themselves. The problem is if you don't have it, you end up going to court to get guardianship, and that is not a process anybody wants to go through.
But you stress, you say to know, you need to know when to let your parents make decisions for themselves and to accept those decisions, even if they're not what you want as a child. I'm aware of a situation now where a 94-year-old parent is being bullied by his child and relocated against his will, and he doesn't know what to do, having given him power of attorney.
Well, power of attorney, if you're competent and able to make decisions for yourself, power of attorney doesn't override that. I mean, you still are in control, and you can change your power of attorney at any time. So this person might want to consider changing his power of attorney. Mm-hmm. What I think makes things complicated is, and you're absolutely right, I talk quite a bit in the book about knowing when to back off and just let your parent do things that maybe you think aren't the safest or the best decisions. But I think with power of attorney, it is a very powerful tool, and you have to be very careful who you give it to. On the other hand, somebody shouldn't be making decisions and doing things when you're still competent and able to make those decisions for yourself. There is obviously a sort of a gray area where is somebody really competent to be making a decision?
Right.
They may be competent to make small decisions and not big decisions, or they may be competent to make decisions about where they want to live, but maybe not writing checks to people.
What happens if some charlatan or gigolo type or something gets control of your parents' finances and winds up with power of attorney? Are you helpless?
Well, you need to go talk to a lawyer right away, and you're not helpless. You can go to the courts and you can argue it, and if they're not acting in your parents' best interests and, you know, they have fiduciary responsibility, then you can fight that. But as you bring up a great point, not just with power of attorney, but I added in this edition a whole section on fraud, because that is happening in terrifying degrees that people are, you know, I don't mean to scare everybody, but you need to be very alert to what goes on out there. It is so common, maybe not in huge ways, but that people are scamming and defrauding elderly people.
Well, we have so much of that in Florida. A lot of it originates here.
Oh, it's terrifying. And I think it's really important for friends and family to know warning signs, to know when to step in, to know what to do, and really have a lot of conversations with an elderly person about things they should avoid and what kind of scams exist so they know what to look for. I mean, I think a lot of people have heard about the big sweepstakes and the free lunches and the phishing and, you know, getting information online and all of those things. But the new friend that shows up, or the repairman that shows up, or the person that's suddenly having coffee with your parent or doing little favors, and, you know, sweetheart scammers, an aide that you really trust, and suddenly you realize your parent's been writing checks. And sometimes it happens in a fairly, you know, some scammers are scammers beginning to end. They go in to scam somebody. But sometimes it's a son or daughter, another family member, an aide, who actually meant to be doing the right thing but is just so exhausted by caregiving duties. And they're writing checks, and suddenly it starts to be, well, Mom would want, you know, I'm doing so much for her. Mom would want me to pay for a little vacation for myself, or, you know, replace my car, or, and that just grows and grows until they're, you know, moving tens of thousands of dollars mm-hmm. into their account.
Well, we're going to get back to this issue of fraud and much more when we return. We need to take a short break. We're speaking with Virginia Morris. She's an award-winning journalist and syndicated health columnist. And she first published in 1996, this is the updated third version of How to Care for Aging Parents. And we'll come back and take your calls and emails.
Kids Summer Camp is now open for enrollment. Kids Summer Camp is ideal for working parents offering affordable prices, morning care, and an extended camp session right up to the first day of school. You can enroll for Kids Summer Camp at kidinc.org before May 30th.
Hazardous waste like oil-based paints, pool chemicals, and pesticides don't belong in the trash can. Help protect the environment by safely disposing of household chemicals at a home chemical collection center. Information at miamidade.gov/publicworks or dial 311 to learn more.
April is National Poetry Month. WLRN and the O Miami Poetry Festival want to hear from you. In verse, write a poem about anywhere between the Palm Beaches and the Keys, someplace that's special to you. Include the phrase, "This is where," and submit it to WLRN.org.
Welcome back to Monday's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and Virginia Morris. She's written an updated third edition of How to Care for Aging Parents, a one-stop resource for all your medical, financial, housing, and emotional issues. The number again to join in the conversation, 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576, or email is radio@wlrn.org.
And first up, we go to Joyce. She's in Coconut Grove. Hi, Joyce.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I have a recent issue. My father died at the age of 96, and my mom is 89, and she's at the house. And it turns out that she's become a huge hoarder. The house is just totally full of stuff. And my sister's tried to help. I've tried to help. She doesn't want to do a thing. And she needs to move to a facility, you know, that can care for her. She can't live there by herself. It's a house, you know. And we are trying and trying, and it's not working. I don't know what to do other than give up.
She doesn't want to move to assisted living, I assume.
No, she does. She does want to move. Yes, but she won't.
Give up her stuff.
Give up her stuff, and it's just floor-to-ceiling junk.
So you want to put stuff in the garbage can, and she wants to bring it with her to the assisted living?
She can't physically, she just can't make herself do anything, you know, just sort it out, or, and even when we go there, she just has to look at every single thing and says, no, I can't get rid of it.
Well, there may be a, you know, it's hard not knowing her and all, but this hoarding thing is pretty common.
Yeah, right.
And there may be sort of a period of transition where she selects the things she wants to take with her, knowing that the rest of it is not going to be thrown out. Maybe you buy for a month a storage bin and just move all of it in there. Of course, if you're the one moving it in there, you'll obviously throw some of it out. But
yeah.
If she sort of has a sense of it's not going in the garbage, we're going to keep it. We understand you care about all this stuff. We hear you. Let's keep it, and we'll put it in this storage bin. You take the things that you want for your new apartment. And when she moves and is in there with her things, as time goes by, I think she will become less intrigued.
Good idea.
With hanging on to that stuff. But the hoarding thing is an interesting dilemma. But those things are really valuable to her. I mean, they really, even all those empty cans and boxes and newspapers and broken things.
We had it with my mother-in-law and my sister-in-law, and we're familiar with it, but my mom's she's very stubborn, and she's, so that's a good idea. Maybe if we just box it up and tell her we're going to box it up for later.
We're not throwing one thing out. We're going to keep it all.
Good idea.
Whoever heard of a mother being stubborn?
How about a father?
Yeah. Thanks, Joyce.
Good Thank luck. Thank you so much. I like the idea.
Thank you.
Okay.
And we have another Joyce. This is an email. Two questions. Her father was in World War II. He does not collect any veterans benefits, but thinks he may qualify. He does not have a documentable injury, but clearly has suffered from ramifications. Any insight as to where or whom to speak with? That's the first question.
Well, I'm sure they've already spoken with the obvious candidates. I mean, you need to call the Veterans Administration or go to VA, VA.gov, I think it is. And they really have pretty clear explanations of who gets what.
He must have a military ID number. They could
I would think.
Yeah.
Who would document.
All right.
A call to the VA should give him explanation of what he's entitled to.
Okay. And her second question, I'm one of those children doing thousands of things that, though I'm happy to be doing it, I'm wondering what the professional equivalent would be pay-wise and how I might go about possibly being paid without alienating my father, who's very dear to me.
Being paid by his father. Well, two quick things. One is once you talk to the VA, the VA has a program in which the assistance that you get, you can choose who to hire. So if he's deemed in need of an aide, for example, they might let him actually hire his son and pay for his son to take care of him. Beyond that, I am a huge proponent of exactly that. And I think caregiver compensation is something we need to all be looking at and talking about. I'm guessing he has siblings or something, maybe, does he say?
Well,
she
just mentions herself. I don't know if she has siblings.
Are there tax write-off possibilities?
You have to pay taxes on it if you get compensated.
Writing off what you give to the parent that you're taking care of.
But that's time. That's not...
Yeah, that's harder.
You can't write off time.
If you get paid from your parent, it is considered income. But what I would do is have somebody from a local home care agency come in, do an assessment, and give an estimate of a price of what professional care would cost. And that would give him a ballpark figure of what is this worth. If you were hiring a professional to do what I'm doing, what would they be paid? Mm. He may not expect to get the full amount, but certainly it's reasonable to get something.
I mean,
a lot of caregivers have to give up their work or give up promotions or give up hours at work, and it is a lot of
Putting miles on cars.
And especially caregivers who are, buying groceries and doing other things definitely should be compensated. I would just say for any person who has siblings, you need to treat it with kid gloves, and you need to be pretty businesslike about it and really outline in a week, these are the things I do, these are the hours I'm spending, this is what it's, taking up for me, this is what a local agency would pay somebody to do this, and while, it's my father and maybe I don't expect to get full price, I need some compensation because this is wreaking havoc in my life.
And that sibling could be out of town. So they're not having to put up with the day-to-day grind of caretaking. And then the other sibling then might want to have a bigger stake in the estate.
Well, and you do have to make finances, I believe, very clear. And the other siblings may want to see accountings and may want to see copies of bank statements. So they know that this one sibling isn't taking advantage of the situation and just, sitting on the couch watching a movie and chucking up hours.
Right.
I think you want to really have very open communications and conversations about what will be covered. What happens if the primary caregiver sibling takes a vacation and somebody else has to come in for a week? Do they get paid for that 1 week that they showed up and helped? Probably not, but you should figure that out in advance. What kind of respite will they get? What other things can other people do to help? And just write up a contract. I actually have a contract in the back of the book, and it's also available online at careforagingparents.com, and it's just a family caregiver contract for just this exact kind of thing to give people a starting point of, make it official. Because one thing you see a lot of is siblings at the end of caring for an aging parent just just not speaking to each other ever again. There are so many hot topics and emotions and just the money and who's it going to and who's doing how much work. And you don't want that. You want to keep your sibling relationships together. So be clear and be honest and keep it all above board and communicate regularly.
Okay. Let's take another call. We're talking about caring for aging parents or aging friends. Maria in South Miami. Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me on the air. I was on air last week on the show about Alzheimer's. I'm dealing with that elderly caregiving issue with my parents. Virginia, thank you so much. Your insight has been so beautiful so far. I've been taking notes. I'm a journalist, and I've been taking notes throughout this show regarding power of attorney. I think that families should do this rather earlier on instead of waiting to the last minute. I have it with my parents, and my brother is my backup. So, I mean, what do you think about that? It's why wait till the last minute, right?
Oh, definitely. In fact, you should have a power of attorney written up for yourself, too.
Right. Like
most people, when they get a will, get some kind of durable power of attorney. So that if they are, you know, any of us can become sick and be put in the hospital and need somebody to deal with our finances and pay our bills. So, oh, absolutely. I'm a big believer in do all of these things as soon as possible, because generally caregivers are just responding to crises, and that's not going to be healthy for them, and it's going to mean mediocre or inadequate care for a parent. So absolutely get all of those documents in place right away.
I mean, if you're in your, you know, your 30s or your even 20s, I mean, it's really important to discuss this with your parents. It's like life 101 in college. Because
yeah.
Even your parents could get sick at a young age. You don't even have to be elderly.
That's right. So which one of us is going to take care of this? How will decisions be made? How do we find the paperwork we need? Where do you keep your checkbook? What are the passwords for your various,
exactly.
You know, and how do we make sure that everybody's comfortable with this? So
and then to the person who was calling about storage and hoarding, one of the things that's really super important with now most elderly people, I know this isn't about Alzheimer's, but, you know, we have attachments to things, and, you know, we love our things. And I had to do was donate my mother's furniture, which she was very attached to, which was lovely furniture, to Habitat for Humanity in order to make room for her hospice care in the home, because at least she would be at home and not at a nursing facility. And so, like, I think the family and the siblings and everyone has to kind of emotionally release the attachment to that stuff.
Hmm. Virginia, your thoughts?
Well, I think you're right. I mean, I can't add a whole lot to it, but and I think anytime you're dealing with a parent who isn't doing what you want them to do, whether it's not giving up their stuff or they're climbing the ladder and cleaning the gutter or they're driving, or there are so many issues that we wish our parents would handle differently than they do sometimes. You know, I think stopping and just listening to them and letting them know that you hear them and that you value what they're saying is just a really important first step, because quite often we come in and we have a lot of opinions about what should happen, and mom, you know, we think you should move and we found this place for you, and, you know, it just doesn't go over very well. And I think if you can start by just listening and saying, I know you love this furniture and you don't want it, what do you think we should do about this, because we have to get this hospital bed in here and it won't fit with all this stuff, and what's your thought on it? It's obviously a different situation if your parent has Alzheimer's, but just the fact of listening to them and respecting them and hearing them will get you much further in the long run when you're trying to get something accomplished or changed.
You know, Virginia, I was going to ask you because we did do that show last week on Alzheimer's, and sometimes it's difficult to know if someone's suffering from a form of dementia or if it's depression or something else entirely. So what do you recommend in those cases where a child just doesn't know if that, you know, I guess they just have to seek professional help?
Seek professional help because it is a good thing to know about, in part because, I mean, Alzheimer's isn't curable or even really treatable, but you want to know what it is because there are so many things that can cause dementia and confusion and forgetfulness. And often, even if they have an underlying cognitive impairment, other things like medications and hearing and vision and nutritional deficiencies, and there's a whole list of things that can be making it worse for them. Mm-hmm. Depression, you mentioned, definitely. So sometimes treating those other things will ease some of the confusion. And sometimes just learning ways to deal with somebody who's confused, just understanding what is happening in their brain so you're not constantly frustrated and getting upset with them. How did you leave this stove on again? I told you four times. You know, understanding that they're trying their best. This isn't
right.
Something they can suddenly remember. And also, when a parent is, especially in the early stages, you know, they can become angry and irritable. And I think when you understand what's going on, you realize, of course they're angry and irritable because the world is so topsy-turvy. And it's not like you or I forgetting where we put our glasses and then saying, oh, let me think, where were they? You actually forget you wear glasses and can't figure out why you can't see anything. Or, you know, you come out of a store and it's not that you forget where you parked your car. You don't remember how you even got to the store or why you're there. And so you become really afraid, who left me here? And then when you, the unsuspecting daughter, come and pick them up and they start screaming at you, where were you and why didn't you? It's their own fear of the situation, and you're just the scapegoat. But I think sometimes learning what's going on with them, what kind of dementia they may have, where they are in the process, how you can sort of ease the symptoms and how to manage the symptoms is really important to do and will help everybody.
Let's go back to our callers. This is Gary. He's in Fort Lauderdale. Thanks for your patience, Gary. Hi.
Thanks, Joe. It's a pleasure being here with you and Bonnie and Virginia. I have to say, this is Gary Bark from today's Caregiver Magazine and caregiver.com and a Fort Lauderdale resident. And I have to say, it's just so wonderful to hear one of my favorite caregiver advocates on my favorite radio station. So
thank you.
We just about to come up on our 20th year, and Virginia was one of the few voices out there in the wilderness saying, the caregivers are coming, the caregivers are coming, when we started. So it's a pleasure to hear you on the radio, Virginia.
Well, go on my website and you can email me directly.
Oh, excellent.
If people have questions or comments or any of that, careforagingparents.com, they put contact information in there. So
excellent.
I'm happy to talk.
No, it's terrific. I'm glad you've got a third edition of the book out. One of the things that I think is so incredibly important for family caregivers is that, you know, 7 million of us in the country, and we all think we're absolutely alone, is support groups. And, you know, we host our Fearless Caregiver conferences, and I consider them big support groups because you have a few hundred people all seeing other people going through what they're going through and talking with one another. And I find that it leads to people, what I call your family of choice, people, you know, going to support groups in the community. What are your thoughts on when you talk to family caregivers about respite and support groups? How do you get them to go?
Oh, my gosh. Well, this is my favorite topic, so I try to keep it really short. Caregivers really need to take care of themselves. Number one, first and foremost, you have to take care of yourself. You know, they get so busy and so immersed, and they're worrying all the time and the anxiety of it. So it's not just the time spent, it's the 24/7 worrying, the guilt that you're not doing enough, the resentment that you have to do so much. You know, family can push so many buttons. So it is an emotional overload even if you're not doing a lot of hands-on care. And if you don't take care of yourself, you're just going to be depressed and sick and irritable, and you're not going to be a good caregiver. So it's counterintuitive in a certain way, but if you can take the time to go to a support group, to take a walk with a friend, to do things and care for yourself, you'll actually be a better caregiver, and you'll do a better job at this, and you'll be more patient, and you'll be calmer, and you'll be more clear-headed and efficient. So I can't stress this strongly enough, how important it is to, whether you like going to a support group or you have a friend who's going through some of this or somebody you can unload to, take a bath, get a massage, just go do things for yourself, get away from it occasionally, and really recognize the limits of what you can accomplish. You know, you can't make your parent young, and you can't take away all their loneliness or their ailments, but you can support them, and you have to really feel good about what you are doing for them and stop constantly feeling terrible about what you're not doing for them, which I think we all feel. But you make an incredible point, because getting respite care, getting your siblings involved early on, doling out jobs, using community services, very important. Everyone to do it, and you just have to remind caregivers over and over. And anybody who is the sort of secondary caregiver, if there's one sibling who's doing most of the work and you maybe live far away and can't help as much, then your job is really to support that caregiver and just let them know what a good job they're doing. I remember when I was caring for my mom, my sister sent me a $50 gift card to Starbucks, and I thought, oh my God, somebody appreciates what I'm doing. You know, it was a little gesture, but it was really sweet. You know, go spend some time, take care of yourself, send them a massage or something.
We have an emailer, Alan. What if your aging parent is short-fused and argumentative in discussions about things like selling their home and downsizing? She keeps putting off the important decisions and puts herself at increased risk.
Or I guess insisting on driving, too.
Well, that's a big one. But first, let's, you know, in this case, it's things like selling her home and downsizing.
Right, and I would say that's probably the number one question I get when I give talks. You know, my parent needs to blank and won't, and usually it's about moving or driving. They're two separate issues. I think, again, as I said before, try to listen to them and find out what they're angry about and what exactly they're afraid of, you know, and validate that. You know, Mom, I can't even imagine. It must be really hard for you. And be on their side. You know, respect how hard this is for them. You know, this is a place they fixed up and paid the mortgage and raised their kids and entertained their friends. And this means a lot to them. And moving is such a final step into a kind of your last place. So I think as soon as you're kind of on their side and listening to them and respecting them, they're going to hear you a little better. And then you can sort of talk about, well, what are the risks of staying here? What might happen if you stay here? Who's going to help you if that happens? If you fall and break your hip, what does that scenario look mm-hmm. like? You know, how about we just go visit this place and take a look at it and have lunch there, and maybe you'll, you know, see it a little differently. I think there's only so much you can do. I think sometimes getting a different person involved, you know, they've heard you talking about this for so long, but when their doctor or their clergy member or a brother or a uncle steps in and says, you know, I think you should do blah, 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 sometimes they just hear it from somebody else differently. It can be very frustrating when they do that, but but at least they're listening.
Right.
You know, I think once you've gone through sort of a series of steps, at some point you may have to just stop banging your head against the wall. This is the life they want. If they're relatively lucid and cognizant and competent, then they have the right to take that risk. And it's one of the hardest things a caregiver does. But sometimes you just have to live with their decisions and step back and say, this is their life. And the truth of the matter is, we probably aren't going to be so different when we're their age. And we're not going to be so compliant and just do what our children tell us to do. So, you know, I think you do what you can do, you make the points, you have the conversations, and then try to live within their decisions. Driving, just because it came up, you know, now you're in a different territory because they may kill somebody else.
Right.
So it's not their own life at risk, it's somebody else. And that's a whole nother conversation, but that you have to be a lot more firmer and aggressive about.
We're speaking with Virginia Morris. Her book is How to Care for Aging Parents, a one-stop resource for your medical, financial, housing, and emotional issues. We need to take one more short break, and we'll be right back.
Direct from the City of Angels to the Magic City, Miami Light Project presents Timor and the Dime Museum. Fusing avant-garde, pop, and vaudeville sounds, the Dark Lamb Opera Band Timor and the Dime Museum sing stories of demented possessions, global catastrophes, and social orders. April 18th through 19th at the Lightbox at Goldman Warehouse. Tickets and information at MiamiLightProject.com.
If someone you love requires a kidney transplant, the gift of life may be closer than you think, right inside you. That's because anyone with two healthy kidneys can donate. The Miami Transplant Institute, located at Jackson Memorial Hospital and affiliated with the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine, can determine if you're a match. If not, they may be able to pair your loved one with another donor. More information about transplants is available at MiamiTransplantInstitute.org.
Ziff, Perez, Knight. These names donate millions of dollars, but charity also includes more private acts of generosity. I'm Tom Hudson. Join us tonight at 7 for an encore presentation of The Sunshine Economy, Giving It Away, Philanthropy in South Florida, made possible by Kaufman Rossen.
Past 1 o'clock. It is today's topical occurrence. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and also journalist and author Virginia Morris. Bonnie, you have an email?
Yes, Gary wanted he lost the connection. He wanted to send his regards. And we thank you for calling, Gary. And he wanted to send his regards to you, Virginia.
Oh, thank you.
Okay.
And we'll move along to Robert. He's in Miami. Hi.
Hi. Hi, everybody. Good afternoon. Good show, thanks. I'm going through a pretty heavy dilemma at this time of my life and my siblings. 2-3 years ago, my mother was living in Houston alone. You know, she was divorced. She didn't have anybody. And I made that proverbial trip over there because the neighbor was telling me certain things of her behavior. So when I went over there, I realized that her living alone in a 7 million populated city in Houston, Texas, was not going to cut it. So I immediately made the decision with the sibling that met me there to get her out and get her out quick. And I brought her, literally took over her car and drove it over to Miami and kept her here. Luckily, years ago, I have full power of attorney. And she came into quite a bit of money of selling property in Los Angeles, California. It's pretty good money. And I was put on the account as an equal on the account along with one of my siblings. She stayed in California for a year. She stayed with me in Miami for a year, and then she wanted to go to LA for a little bit with my sister. And within that year, the dementia set in like wildfire. The insomnia, you know, they're digressing into childhood where, you know, they don't want to do what you tell them to do, and 3 o'clock in the morning strolls and wanting to go out to the street to take a walk at all hours. And so now we're in the dilemma of, what do we do? Do we put her in care? Do we hire somebody to put her into the house to help my sister out, who, by the way, you all haven't talked about it, but the most largest problem with elderly parent care is the spouse. The spouse burns out very quickly. So she has that problem. I technically have that problem, Miami, with my spouse. They just can't take it. They're just not going to be that loving and caring. They don't want to hassle it. So here we are sitting on a large amount of money. I have full power of attorney, full power with the money, and my mom cannot make a decision on her own. It's done. It's they've called it dementia, maybe early Alzheimer's. We still haven't gotten really a solid prognosis from the doctors in Los Angeles. and I'll be flying into Los Angeles probably in May to bring her out to Miami to get have doctors see her here and make the hard decision.
Right.
And the situation is that there's two types of health care, the Cadillac service and the United States federal government service, which is not very Cadillac. It's a Volkswagen bug.
Virginia, how about your comments on...
Well, my dilemma is I feel a bit guilty. I'm saying to myself, do I pay the $4,000 a month for the Cadillac service and just zip it right through the bank account? Where do you start with this when you have a large sum of money, which if you go Medicare, the federal government takes it, gone. Do you go Cadillac service and let the Cadillac service deplete that account?
Virginia, your thoughts?
Well, that money is hers for her care.
That is true.
My immediate reaction is yes, get her the best care that she can afford with that money that's there for her. I mean, I know it's hard for you and your sisters thinking maybe it would pass on to you, but for...
Yes, no, you're right. I'm being honest.
Yeah, no, it's... And yeah. Believe me, this is a huge issue for a lot of people, and I'm glad you're being so honest because I think a lot of people just go for the cheaper service and would, you know, try to keep the money. But you've raised a couple of issues. I'll try to comment quickly on all of them. But A1, yes, I would get her the best care, especially with dementia where she can't speak up for herself. She needs to be in a place where you know people are really taking care of her and are trustworthy. So I would pay for the care that is right for her and not worry so much about the money since she seems to have enough. The spouse burnout thing hopefully will be eased when she's in some sort of facility, even though you're both going to be worrying about her on the phone and visiting her.
The spouses, her husband will be relieved immediately. We know that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that is a dilemma that people don't talk about that much. But the spouse is the one that suffers also.
Oh, very much so. And it's really, again, important. I won't go into all of it, but, you know, early on to include their opinions in these things and not just think this is your decision because it's your mom. If they're moving in with you or spending a lot of time with you or you're gone a lot, you know, you don't want to lose your marriage and your kids and everything you care about because of a parent. So, you know, you're juggling so many things, but keep the lines of communication open. Hear what the spouse has to say. Thank them. Be grateful. Be understanding. You know, even though you're the one who really needs the pat on the back and the care,
How about some websites that people can get more information, Virginia?
Well,
we'll have them on our Facebook page and also on our website.
Well, my website's careforagingparents.com, and there are several chapters in the book that you can download for free, including ones that deal with some of these emotional issues. Just as far as the spouses, it doesn't help directly, but there is something called the Well Spouse Foundation, which is for people, the well spouse of somebody who's caring for somebody, so it's not what you're talking about. But
Well Spouse?
Yeah, and I think if you go to eldercare.gov and find the Area Agency on Aging, or go to the Alzheimer's Association website. They should be able to tell you about support groups, which would be very helpful for you, I would think, especially talking about things like spouses and burnout. But in this particular case, I think, yes, get your mother into a facility and get your marriages back on track.
I just wanted to, we only have about a minute left, Virginia, just in this last minute, because this is an updated third edition, has the internet and technology made caretaking much easier, or has it also been a curse in some ways?
You're exactly right, both. You know, when I first wrote this book, I started in 1991 with the first edition. There was no internet, and boy, life was hard. I mean, you couldn't find anything except making 10 phone calls and going through boxes of brochures. So it's been hugely helpful if you know where to go to and if you know what sites to avoid. The internet can be terribly distracting, and also there's so much out there, and so much of it is terrible. And I know about these issues. There are hundreds of sites put out by people who are making money and trying to sell you things, and foundations and companies that create sort of very benign nonprofit-looking websites that are actually sort of insidiously
trying to sell you something. We don't want to cut you off, but it's time. How can one, well, Joe's giving me the signal. I can't ask you this last question, but I guess the book really would help with that.
The back of the book has hundreds of websites all vetted.
Okay, very good. Virginia Morris, her book, How to Care for Aging Parents, a one-stop resource for all your medical, financial, housing, and emotional issues. And we will have links to all of these things on our website. Thank you, Virginia.
Thanks so much for having me.
And that wraps up today's edition. Sorry to Jimmy and Kim, we couldn't get to your calls. Our producer is Richard Ive, technical supervision by Michael Stock. Free audio archives and downloads of this and previous programs at our website, WLRN.org. Also, we have the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow, we delve into the subject of pain. Nearly one half of American adults endure chronic pain, and the opioid wars have an impact. We'll visit with health columnist and author Judy Foreman. And here's the calendar. On this day in 1890, 124 years ago, the birth of author and environmentalist Marjorie Stoneman Douglas in Minneapolis. She began work at the Miami Herald in 1914 under her father, Frank Stoneman. And on this day in 1894, 110 years ago, the first public library in South Florida opens at Lemon City, 63rd Street near Biscayne Bay. It remains open today at 61st Street and Northeast 4th Court. And one more while we contemplate speakeasies and bathtub gin. On this day in 1933, 81 years ago, Franklin Roosevelt signs legislation ending alcohol prohibition in the U.S. after Utah became the 38th state to ratify the 21st Amendment. So we leave with a thought from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. She wrote more than 100 short stories. Quote, "To be a friend of the Everglades is not necessarily to spend time wandering around out there." Joseph Cooper for Bonnie Berman. Stay tuned for Here and Now next from NPR News.